Oh, it's anime. Yes, it's anime. Don't confuse it with canime or may I. Oh, anime. Animalicious. It's so delicious with its variety too. Oh, anime. Based on manga or sometimes video games, novels, and TV shows. Oh, anime. So delicious. The music reaches us in such a way to move emotionally. Oh, anime. Can't you see it now? We've got everything with a zip, zap, and pow. Hey, cat girl, how are you doing? Sorry, I just couldn't help notice that you were a-mewing. Hey, samurai, such an honorable guy. Protect the prefecture with all of your might. Hey, robot, yes, the big one. Are you keeping us safe from the astro invaders? Oh, anime, anime delicious. Have it with your breakfast, it's nutritious. Oh, anime, anime-tastic. It's something fantastic for you and me.
There's clever engineers.
But no.
Time for ASO Radio.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and a talk of all ages to another fantastic entry of ASO Radio. I am, of course, your host, NZ17. Sans DB3, but hopefully we'll have him on the show within the next couple of weeks. No guarantees, though, because we're really bad at keeping promises. So, episode 88. What do we have in store for you this week? Well, we have two more anime reviews. Don't want to give any spoilers here, but I can guarantee that one of them is getting a not recommended, and one of them is getting a good recommendation. Which will get which? What am I even reviewing? Well, just hold on to your pants and listen to some anime news first. And then, of course, we've got our hotspot featuring a couple more of our fun little commercials we've done up, and a Nanda Sukan interview that we did back in 2005. Anyways, plenty to do, short time to do it in, so let's get the ball rolling with some anime news, hand-selected by yours truly. Dun, 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 dun. Welcome to the evening news with Dan Weathers.
This is Dan Weathers reporting your weekly anime news.
Okay, well, I initially thought we weren't going to have very much anime this week, but I was surprised. There's actually a rather interesting mix of anime news that has happened in the past week. So let's just get started with Hello Kitty. That's right. There's going to be a flight done by Ava Air, the Taiwanese airline company, who will be running daily flights from Taipei to Tokyo and Taipei to Fukuoka on a Hello Kitty-themed jet, complete with stewardesses wearing Hello Kitty-themed uniforms, Hello Kitty-themed meals, and Hello Kitty boarding passes. Pictures can be seen on the official site at avakitty.avaair.com. Animania HD, available nationally on Dish Network, will have the U.S. TV premiere of Samurai 7 on Wednesday, March 1st, 2006, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time as part of the channel's new Wednesday Animayhem block. I think that term, though, is owned by a card game. Anyways, the cable TV premiere of Samurai 7 will air on IFC on Saturday, April 1st, 2006, at 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. The half-hour series will air in conjunction with IFC's Samurai Saturdays, a weekly presentation of classic Asian martial arts-themed movies. Next up, we have a Synopsium on anime and manga at MIT. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology will host an academic synopsium entitled Violence and Desire in Japanese Pop Culture on April 14th and 15th. The event will feature presentations by John O'Donnell and professors from Duke, Tufts, Harvard, and MIT. FYE, parent company bids for Musicland. Transworld Entertainment Corporation, parent company of FYE, for your entertainment, has made a bid to acquire Musicland for $104 million in cash and $17.1 million in debt assumption. According to Home Media Retailing, Transworld will convert 345 Suncoast and Sam Goody stores to its own brands and close the remainder. Yoko Ishida at KawaiiCon. KawaiiCon has announced that Yoko Ishida will be a guest at the April 14th through 16th convention in Honolulu, Hawaii. Also, news for yous, going to Tokyo, there's a Sailor Moon tour. Yes, that's right, Genvid has announced plans for a Sailor Moon themed 3-day, 4-night tour of Tokyo. The tour will visit landmarks featured in Sailor Moon anime and manga. 4Kids licenses Pretty Cure. Al Khan, CEO of 4Kids Entertainment, announced at the ICV2 anime and manga panel, New York Comic Convention, that 4Kids has licensed Pretty Cure, Toya's long-running Magical Girl series. The show will apparently run this fall on TV. No further details are available at this time, except 4Kids promised it will be unrecognizable when it airs on television. Either that, or I'm indulging. MegaCon, Full Metal Alchemist licensed. Funimation announced at MegaCon this weekend that they have acquired the license to the feature-length animated film Full Metal Alchemist, The Conqueror of Shambhala. No further details available, of course. New CMX manga licenses. At the New York Comic Con, CMX announced the licensees to the following licenses to the following manga: Emma, Omakui Desu, The Recipe for Gertrude, and The Empty Empire. Also announced was Mega Tokyo, the popular webcomic, making CMX the third publisher to handle the Mega Tokyo license. Super Manga licensed by ADV. According to the March issue of Anime Insider, ADV Manga will be releasing The Sugar, a Tiny Snow Fairy manga, this August. New Gundam Seed anime. The first of 4 volumes and a special edition of Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Destiny will be released in Japan on May 26. Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Destiny Special Edition The Broken World will compile the Gundam Seed Destiny TV series into 4 90-minute volumes. The original series, of course, runs over 1,000 minutes. Each disc will retail for 5,040 yen and carry numerous extras such as Destiny Collection Phase 01 Still Image Collection. Bandai Visual's Japanese website for the special edition has further details. A sales solicitation for the upcoming Japanese Gundam Seed Destiny Special Edition DVD release includes the following statement. The Seed Boom Heats Up, OAV, Mobile Suit Gundam Seed, CE-73 Stargazer, currently being planned. No further details, blah blah blah. Namco Bandai cuts forecast. According to Bloomberg, Namco Bandai Holdings has cut its profit forecast for the 2006 fiscal year ending March 31st by 55% to 11 billion yen. Overall, sales are expected to be 450 billion yen, 4% lower than previously forecast. The company cited below expected sales of Nintendo DS titles as the principal cause for the lowered forecast. Namco Bandai Holdings will also announce that it will buy out all remaining shares of Banpresto for 18.3 billion yen, a 26% premium over the current market value of Banpresto's shares. The arcade and console game manufacturer would then become a wholly owned subsidiary of Namco Bandai. The year-long 2006 New York International Children's Film Festival will begin on March 11th with a special screening of My Neighbor Totoro. The screening will be the East Coast premiere of Disney's new English-language Totoro dub. All attendees will receive a free Miyazaki DVD. Starting on April 1st, the festival will present films on the first weekend of every month, starting with Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind and My Neighbor Totoro on Saturday, April 1st and Sunday, April 2nd. Tickets are $10.75 for adults and $7 for children under 12. Further information and online ticket purchasing is available at gkids.com. And on a pleasant note, preserving our history. The Fukuoka City Public Library has announced that it has produced a restored copy of Princess of Baghdad and will be showing it in its theaters this weekend. The 48-minute black-and-white animation from 1948 is one of the first animated movies created in Japan after World War II. The movie is based on a story of the Arabian Nights. And last, the long-running story that we frequently visit here, dealing with Satsuki and Mei's house in the Ghibli Museum. On February 15th, Aichi Prefecture announced that Suzuki and Mei's house, one of the most popular exhibits of last year's Aichi World Expo 2005, will reopen this July as part of the I World Fair Memorial Park, nicknamed Morikori Park, scheduled for open on the site of last year's World Expo. The prefecture has approximated 3.5 billion yen in construction and maintenance costs for the park in the 2006 budget. Aside from Satsuki and May's house, a giant Ferris wheel will reopen and plans are also underway to transform the former guest house into an exhibition hall by March of next year. Satsuki and May's house is the recreation of the 1950s Showa-era home that the main characters of popular anime My Neighbor Totoro live in. The prefecture will operate the attraction for 3 to 5 years and admission fees will be charged. Adult ticket prices will be 500 yen, while middle school students and younger children will be able to get in for 250 yen. Satsuki and May's house was so popular that its small size led to major ticket reservation headaches for Ghibli and Expo organizers. Due to the small size and fine detail of the house, it was only able to accommodate 800 visitors per day. The visitors were allowed into the house in small groups on a tight schedule. Most other pavilions at Aichi were able to accommodate 3,000 or more visitors, however few were anywhere near as popular as Satsuki and May's house. In order to control the flow of visitors to the house, Ghibli decided to distribute the tickets via Lawson convenience stores, the same method that tickets to Ghibli's museum are reserved. There was no charge to reserve tickets, visitors only need to pay the regular expo admission fee. However, due to the limited duration of the pavilion, as it was open to the public for the duration of Aichi Expo, 6 months from March to September, there has been significantly more demand for the tickets than availability, and ticket scalpers turned to online auction sites such as Yahoo to sell the tickets at significantly inflated prices. When tickets went on sale March 1st, the tickets were sold out within 5 hours. Approximately 240,000 people attempted to make reservations for the 30,000 tickets available, and approximately 500 of those tickets appeared on Yahoo despite requests from Ghibli. Yahoo refused to remove the auctions, stating that they were not against the law. Matters took a turn for the worst on April 1st, when over 600,000 requests for tickets were made, and the reservation system froze at 10 a.m. When the system came back online, it was found that all tickets had already been sold. Before the end of April, Studio Ghibli and Aichi Expo decided to abandon the ticket reservation system and instead use a postcard-based lotto system to award tickets. Interested visitors had to send in a request via postcard, which must include their Expo ticket number. Vouchers to visit Satsuki and May's home were awarded randomly. Thankfully, all this has been sorted out, and we can move on with our lives. Hey, I know. Now let's move on to the anime review.
Does it suck? Does it rock? Who knows? Anime review.
Okay, I promised 2 reviews and I'm going to deliver them. We've got reviews of both Yurusei Yatsura and the very long titled Genshiken Volume 1, Society for the Study of Modern Visual Culture. First up, let's review Yurusei Yatsura. Those of you not familiar with Rumiko Takahashi should immediately start your learning with Yurusei Yatsura, the first television series that was ever animated by the author. So what is Yurusei Yatsura? Well, imagine an early version of your favorite Rumiko Takahashi tale. And really, Yurusei Yatsura has all the elements you expect to see from Takahashi. However, unlike most of her other series, this Yurusei Yatsura television series tends to be more like Looney Tunes in its episodic nature. It's a curious parallel. On one hand, Yurusei Yatsura is episodic. Things that happen in one episode generally stay within the confines of only that episode. But, on another hand, Yurusei Yatsura also has a running storyline beneath all that. So each episode contributes to the skeleton, if you will, of the story, while individual episodes just branch out on their own in whichever way they seem fit. So, how did I enjoy this? Well, first of all, like I said, this show's a lot like Looney Tunes in more than one way. Another way is that the animation quality is highly superb. This show came out a very long time ago, 1981. As a matter of fact, that was before I even existed, and what a miserable time period that was. But, ever since then, we've had plenty of great anime to watch. Yurusei Yatsura was the first of these to go and end the said era. Yes, exactly. No, Yurusei Yatsura, great show because it has this high animation quality. You don't even see an anime today, right? Most anime today, what do you get? You're going to get a face that's either looking straight at the camera or to the side, and all you're getting is a little triangle flapping open and closed when a character talks. Yorusei Yatsura takes the animation to a whole nother level, something that hasn't been done in a long time, partially because we're using computer-aided animation these days instead of hand-drawing it, and also because of smaller budgets and less willingness to go and put the full effort into this. Yorusei Yatsura uses fully animated characters instead of just a mouth or the hair moving or whatever, so you get the full effect. When somebody's talking, their hair is moving, their eyes are blinking, their mouth is actually making mouth shapes and sound shapes in order to go and express itself instead of just merely flapping open and closed. Interestingly enough, though, Yorusei Yatsura, it was chosen by the Animego company, the distributor of it in North America, to only release it subtitled on DVD. Very interesting choice, because most DVDs these days come dubbed in English, as well as optionally subtitled in other languages and sometimes dubbed in other languages as Evangelion. But Yorusei Yatsura's dub is of such exceptional quality in its original Japanese that I have a hard time imagining that an English voice cast could go and give it due work. Granted, it could be very well possible for such a thing to happen, but it has to have a really good ADR director and very specific hand-picked actors and actresses in order to go and pull off all these roles well, because it has very fluid, animated, lively nature to all of the characters, but they, so on the one hand you've got it smooth, but on the other hand you've also got it chunky. These characters have to go and deliver a nice, sweet, soft little voice, and then they have to go really crazy when somebody goes and upsets them, and then, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. You gotta really flow from one to another while all staying in character. And all the voice actors manage to do this really well. It starts off strong. There's four episodes, episodes 1 through 4 that we're reviewing. The first two start off really strong. It's actually interesting because this isn't your typical, like, 25-minute anime show. It has each episode, there's two smaller episodes within it. So think of it as each episode lasting about 12 minutes instead of one larger one. So even though there is, quote-unquote, four episodes, you're really getting eight because they're all, if you will, half episodes. So you get a lot of bang for your buck. The first whole bunch start off well. They introduce Lom, they introduce the story of how the Oni are planning on taking over Earth. There's only one champion that was chosen by the Oni to take on their warrior. His name? Taru Moroboshi. He's very lecherous, loves the ladies, but more loves the features of the ladies. And he has been chosen, of all the people, to defend Earth from Lom, the Oni's chosen champion. Well, I don't want to spoil too much, but suffice to say that Taru does manage to go and stop Lum. However, during the match, Taru was speaking of his betrothal to his girlfriend, and Lum overheard, thinking that it was rather a betrothal to her that he was proposing, and gladly accepted, especially since marriage proposals and marriage are a holy binding thing which cannot be undone on her planet, or so we believe. And as a result, all of the people in attendance around them also heard, further cementing this unexpected marriage, and it was expected to be a goodwill between the Oni and the Earth people. And as a result, Ataru is rather stuck between his childhood love and this lady come lightly. So, it's a very wild setup, but you don't even need to know any of that. You could entirely skip the first episode and be completely fine with everything that's going on in this series because, like I said, it has that Looney Tunes-like quality where you can watch one episode separate from the others and still get the full enjoyment. Now, like I said, the first several episodes had a very nice, strong showing, but the later ones tapered down a good bit. So I can't go and give this one a highly recommended, but I am going to give Volume 1 of Yorusei Yatsura a recommended. Okay, well, if I gave that one a recommended, that means that I have another one which is going to get a not recommended, and that one, ladies, gentlemen, and children of all ages, is Genshiken Volume 1, Society for the Study of Modern Visual Culture. Oh, the premise is good enough. Let's go and make an anime about anime otaku. You know, need to stop doing these shows when I'm so tired. Let's make the premise is making an anime all about the otaku life, the anime-obsessive otaku. And unfortunately, obsessive people are as boring as they are in anime as they are in real life. The show is trying to take more of a serious, try to go and present it as close to life as can be. Unfortunately, though, in the due process of this, trying to make it like a documentary, makes it rather boring. Now, granted, some of the characters and their ways are a bit exaggerated at times, but it's not exactly, it doesn't quite go far enough to keep you enthralled, and even the anime within an anime that they're all watching isn't even worthwhile. It's called Kujibiki Unbalance. It's supposed to be an anime incorporating all the stereotypical things of anime, and like most shows which are supposed to be parodying one thing or another, they just end up falling off flat if not executed properly, and this one is unfortunately not an exception. So all I can say is that it's a really boring show. You got, you know, there's this chick, you know, acts too cool for school, ends up falling for this guy. He turns out to be this big otaku. She doesn't, she wants to be with him because, you know, she knew him when they were young. She thinks he's good looking, but she just can't get over his obsession with anime. And this Genshiken was so boring that I could not even watch a full episode. I decided, well, okay, a lot of times, you know, the opening episodes are boring. So I skipped the opening episode and jumped into a later one, but it still did not do any good to alleviate the problems. I have to give mad props, though, to the English voice cast. Though the subject matter may be droll, they all executed very well. Especially impressive was karaoke in Japanese. Very well executed by native English speakers, I must say. So, very impressive work from the English dub cast, but unfortunately, Anime Works dubbing is not going to save this at all. So I'm going to have to go and give Genshiken a not recommended. Alright, well, now that we've gotten all of the business out of the way, it's time to jump into the fan mail, have ourselves a little interview time, and then play some funny commercials. So, without further ado, fan mail!
Fan mail. Fan mail. Fan mail, fan mail, fan mail, fan mail, fan mail. Fan mail!
Okay, so we don't have any fan mail this episode. It's tragic, I know, but sometimes it does happen. I thought I'd take this opportunity then to go and share with you some interesting statistics. Now I know the words interesting and statistics are mortal enemies who constantly battle each other out every day on the astral plane and here in the mortal realm as well. However, I find these interesting. First up on MSN, Acer Radio is ranked number 3 for the search term anime radio. On Yahoo, we're ranked number 5 for anime podcast and number 2 for anime radio. Very awesome. And on Google, we are ranked number 6 for anime radio. So, we are steadily moving ourselves up the ranks, like right up next to the top on Yahoo, right up next to the top on MSN. Things are really, really, really awesome, because the higher we get placed in those search results, the more people we get listening to Acer Radio. So, if you have a website, please link to us. If you have a forum that you're a member of, go and link to us in your signature. Every little bit helps. And, of course, it helps to mention that we're an anime radio program, or if you will, an anime podcast. so people know what you're talking about. Anyways, I appreciate all the links that we get on the show. So, since we don't have any fan mail to do, I suppose that means that once again it is time for me to issue forth a fan mail topic. So, this week's fan mail topic is on the subject of, something good. Okay, how about this? What is your favorite anime that is over 10 years old? Okay, so anything that came out before 1996 is eligible. So go ahead, jump to the Acer Radio site, click on Communications, click on Fan Mail, send us a piece of fan mail telling us what your favorite anime is that came out 1996 or earlier. Okay, so, okay, all right. One other thing for the fan mail. Got my little time in the sun, if you will. I wanted to take this time to say that I am really enjoying Full Metal Alchemist. Those in the U.S., we're up to episode number 49 out of a 52-episode series. That's right. The latest episode that's coming up, we just finished 48. We're going towards 49. Four episodes left, and this show has just not let up. It is just being very, very awesome. They're trying to go, the show's been really thick and heavy, as it were, with the drama and plot lately, so they're trying to introduce a few more of the comedic elements that were earlier on in the series. Feels a little bit out of place, but it does give you that warm, homey feeling and kind of the thought of things are going full circle. Of course, we do also believe in going full circle here at ASO Radio, so this episode is going to be only 9 minutes long, just like our very first episode. Oh, we're already over 9 minutes. Okay, well, in that case, we will instead continue on the circle, the great circle in the sky, of doing our anime interviews. So, without further ado, let's jump over to the hotspot and feature the second half of our interview with Trevor Duvall from NandesuCon 2005. Come right up and spin the wheel to reveal your hotspot. All right, well, I suppose no further introduction is necessary. If you're just joining us, didn't listen to the last episode, that is to say, we're going to now feature the second half of our interview with Trevor Duvall. First half is in 87. If you missed it, go back, take a listen, and then you can pick right back up with this episode and finish listening to our interview as a whole. I believe that we have only one more interview left, and so this is going to be our like third to last episode with NDK interviews. And after that, we're going to switch things back up with our randomness, which is supposed to be the hotspot. So, anyways, ladies and gentlemen, Trevor Duvall.
Okay, so speaking of, you know, kind of cool characters and whatnot, because I like how, like, every show, it seems, you play, like, four or five different characters. Mm-hmm. They're all minor, but they all add up. as I was going to say to one of our later interviews, he's done just tons of just background character work, is in a way you end up being kind of the voice of the show. You're not the main characters, but you're all of the supporting cast, and so you kind of become the voice of, you know, the world in a way. It's like Master Keaton. You know, you play students in there, a conductor, a reporter, this guy named Franco, and so, I mean, you know,
that's
Master
funny.
Keaton's kind of cool too in itself, that show.
Yeah, that wasn't each one. In fact, I was second choice for Master Keaton. They gave it to they gave it to Ted at the last minute, but he's great. He's great.
And
then
so you're like, oh, congratulations.
Yeah. No. It was there was no. I mean, that's a great thing about the voice world too, is that we don't have the same kind of competitive, you know.
So there's more camaraderie.
Absolutely, especially in Vancouver. There's only a handful of us that do all the work, and it's like a family. So when someone gets something and you don't, it's like, oh, that's cool, man, awesome. I'll get one down the road, and you'll get one, and everybody. There's enough work to go around, so it's not like, oh, I could have been Master Keaton. No, Ted. You know. But Master Keaton was really fun to work on because we got a chance to do all kinds of accents, right? Because the character's going around the world. And that's pretty rare. It's pretty rare in any show where we get to do accents of any kind other than the, you know, standard American accent, you know?
And honestly, it's great fun doing accents.
Oh, absolutely, man. And any chance, any chance we get to do that is just like a gift. So that was a great show. But yeah, in terms of being the voice of the show, that's a wonderful way to look at it. I think I'm going to steal that thought and use it here.
No. In this world, you're not stealing, you're influencing.
That's right. I'm enhancing a previous
there you
concept.
Go, building upon the work of others.
That's right. No, it is, and doing incidental characters is great. I mean, in the shows that I've played leads on, it's fun, it's great. It's great to be a lead, but I really enjoy the little characters. I really enjoy the Wallace sessions, and I really enjoy going in and playing 10 different people in an episode, because it keeps me fresh. It keeps me sharp. You know, if I got to go in and they say, okay, we need you to play this 45-year-old sergeant. He's got 3 lines, and then he blows up. It's like, okay, great, what does he look like? Well, he looks like this. All right, well, I'm going to give you something like this out here. You know, and then, there's another guy. You know, it's awesome. It's so much fun. And it keeps you sharp. And in Vancouver, there's this weird misconception, it seems, with the casting directors that once you sort of move on to the prelay series, the real work, as they call it, that they assume you don't want to go back and do Wall anymore. And I remember I said to one director at one of the studios, I was like, you know, I haven't been for Walla in a long time. He said, oh, well, I mean, you're a prelay guy now. And I'm like, no, my friend, no. Walla is where I cut my teeth, and I, you know, any chance I get to go in there and do it, I love it. It's so much fun. So there really is no such thing as a small role, you know. It's, well, I mean,
well,
there's many small roles.
You can't be the voice that launched 1,000 shows.
You're
allowed minor characters.
Exactly. The voice that launched it. I like that, too. You got a million of them.
Now, I'm sure you get a lot of questions about playing the role of Shiro.
Ah, yes.
But I'm not asking about the original show. I like Nurse Witch Kumi.
Ah, okay.
I thought to myself when I watched the show, you know what? This guy, you know, all of everybody is completely out of water.
Mm-hmm.
The previous
Soul Taker.
Soul Taker. Completely different from mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, what better way to make a parody of magical girls than take these guys from this dark show and put them here?
I thought it was brilliant.
And so when I see Hiro in there, you know, he's got his scars, mm-hmm. his green spiky hair, and, you know, I could not see the guy sing this career. But I could see him ending up falling in it in the world, mm-hmm. you know. And so I thought you did a really great job.
Oh, thank you.
Because the series is almost like a Jekyll and Hyde thing. The first half mm-hmm. is completely different from the second half of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first half, I thought you did a really great job of, like, you know, here's this Komugi, and she's a ditz, and she's not getting her work done. And, you know, you're getting irritated, but you're a cool cat. And so you're trying to keep your cool, but then it's like, damn it, Komugi,
yeah.
get in there and do your
yeah.
role! You know? Why do I have to wear the costume?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just really awesome. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, that
can
was.
Can you give us behind the microphone?
Yeah, that show. I thought the concept was genius, that they took these characters from Soul Taker. And Soul Taker was a dark show. I mean, it was like really, really intensely dark. I loved it. It was really weird, too, but like really, really dark stuff. So when they took these characters...
It's dark as the underside of the belly of the rock of an onyx stone under the new moon.
Yeah, something like that. So when they told us that they were doing the show, my agent called and he said, yeah, they're doing, I don't know, a sequel to Soul Taker or something. I thought, oh, great, we get to go back to that dark place. So, of
the
course...
The part we love in our soul.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
Let it run free.
That's right. But, of course, we quickly figured out this wasn't a sequel. But it was utterly unlike anything I'd ever done before. To take characters from one genre and transplant them into a completely different genre. I thought that was so smart. And I must confess, I didn't really understand a lot of the humor in Nurse Witch Kumugi because I haven't really seen a whole lot of anime, and I think you kind of have to in order to get
Nurse Witch. Yeah, there's a lot of Japanese cultural things.
Yeah, absolutely. And
the little emotion con cat in like the second episode.
Yeah. So I didn't really understand a lot of it, but... it was so much fun to do that show, and to go back to Shiro, because Shiro, I kind of get cast in these Han Solo roles all the time, right? Which I'm not complaining about. I love that.
Well,
I tend to play that, you know, cool pilot guy.
What's his name? They did Han Solo. What's his name?
Oh, Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. You know, look what happened to him. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
No wonder they're like, you want to work the wall? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I play those characters a lot, and Shiro was kind of the first kind of Han Solo character I got the chance to play, and when I got a chance to play him again, I thought this was fantastic, and to play him as this, you know, frustrated kind of wacky guy who's still trying to be cool was so much fun, you know. And the great lines of the, you know, the big monologues he has, and the part where Kamugi, you know, dies and they're at the funeral and
And then she possesses the office, yeah. You know, extracts her revenge.
Yeah, no, that was really cool. And it's always great fun to work with Jocelyn. She's the, Jocelyn Lowen, she's the voice of Kamugi. She's fantastic with her.
Well, she did a great Kamugi.
Yeah.
She really did. And which is funny because, you know, dark show, light show, pink hair, girl, both ways.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see. Well, I guess that covers most of the roles I was going to ask you about, actually.
Yeah.
But there is one more that we just briefly touched on earlier, and that was Mega Man NT Warrior.
Right.
Which, personally, I liked Rockman EXE, which was the original title, but I'm a computer guy, so I guess that figures, but... moving along away from me and back towards you. You played lots of, you know, characters on this show, which must have been neat because it's a bit more cheesy than some of these other ones, and so the voices get to be more outlandish.
Absolutely.
I imagine that's more fun to play.
Absolutely. Mega Man, we just finished the show, actually. We just finished recording the last episode, like, last week. And I played the big bad guy on that show as one of the characters, Dr. Regal, Mysterious Man. And, again, it's fun to play a villain. But the characters that we got to play, it was like free reign. I would go in there and Carl would say, okay, so they want you to play this guy, this is what he looks like, what do you got? And I would make up some outlandish voice or accent, and he'd be like, wow, yeah, that's really crazy. Yeah, that'll work. And you never get a chance to do that because most of the shows we do are pretty straight. You know, like Gundam Seed is perfect, or any of the Gundam shows that I worked on. It was, so, you know, they're the regular people. They're normal. But in Mega Man, I mean, they're really over the top a lot of the time. So it was great fun to do that show. Mr. Match was a hoot, although he was in the first series. I think he showed up briefly in Anti-Warrior, but mostly it was Dr. Regal that... that was a fun one, and Drillman and the others. I forget all the ones I played on the show.
You ever feel like you're like talking to yourself on the like on your shows? Like you'll start talking, you have more than one character, and you'll be just talking.
I talked about this a little bit at the panels, but on Transformers Energon, Alpha Q had four heads, and so that meant Alpha Q had four voices. And most of my scenes were just with myself, so it was me literally talking to myself. So, you know, he'd have a, you know, Alpha Q1 would say, so, you know, what shall we do about this Megatron? Well, I think we should, you know, take care of him. No, we can't be with him now. But just wait, we'll have to talk to Optimus. Like, it was crazy, and I loved it. How we would do it in the studio is, I'd record all of one voice, so I'd record all of Alpha Q1, right? And then I'd go back and I'd record all of Alpha Q2, and then 3 and 4, and then they'd cut them together and play them back, so I'd get to watch the scene. It was like the Trevor DeVal show, you know? It was like all my voices talking at once. It was cool.
And quite a unique experience.
It was, yeah.
You do this, and then all of a sudden, hey, you know, suddenly I'm talking to myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, yeah.
I'm trying.
Yeah, you know, I felt like a star.
That is pretty cool how you do that. Does it sometimes, is it difficult? You got these mouth lights you got to work with, and then you do Transformers, and you know, don't have to go and match that. So, it, you know, is what I'm getting at, I guess I should say, is do you sometimes find that the restrictions of the mouth flap help make you more creative and makes it more challenging and fun? Or do you just sometimes get irritated and you're like, you know, I'm going to go do an episode of Transformers and we'll pick this up tomorrow?
That's actually a really good question. Matching the flaps is all technical acting. One of the first and most common directions I got when I started was act faster. Because what you're doing is providing a voice for someone else's interpretation of the character, you don't have full creative control over that character. So in Prelay, where they animate around us, we can do whatever we want. We can take as much time as we want to get the line out, no matter what we want to do, you know, and they'll animate around that. But in, of course, anime, and dubbing, we have to do what the Japanese artists have, and the Japanese actor who originally played that character, have determined that the character is going to be like. So, it can be frustrating, because a lot of the time you're reading the script, and you're getting a sense of, like, the emotional truth of the scene, and you're thinking, wow, I know I'm going to play this, but then you realize you've got 5 seconds less than you thought you had, and it's really frustrating sometimes,
to try and maintain that emotional truth within the space of, you know, three flats.
And the pacing.
Yes, exactly. And that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, you want to make sure that the dub is going to be realistic and easy to listen to at the end. So you don't have everybody talking really fast because that's, you know, it's ridiculous, right? And I remember in the 70s when I started watching anime, that's how everything was, you know, like the old Battle of the Planets and everything. It was always... Yes, exactly. Oh, my God. You know, here we go. You are tough. And so am I. Let's destroy the city. Right, you know, it was just... But now it's gotten quite sophisticated with the technology that we have, and we're able to
make
do...
it better.
Yeah.
We
have the technology. Yeah.
Well, we're running short on time, so I apologize for interrupting you there.
That's all right.
You seem like you'd be a really great teacher to have for voice acting.
Well, thank you.
I was going to ask you on, you know, 5 good points for, you know, budding voice actors, but we are short on time. But,
okay.
So how about top 2 things you see people make a mistake on real quick? And
okay.
I'll ask you one
sure.
last question. And
sure. The most important thing about voice acting is the acting. I think that's something that a lot of people forget about. They think that they can do, because they can do some funny voices, that they're going to have a career in the industry. But it's far more important to be a good actor than it is to have a huge repertoire of voices. Having a huge repertoire of voices certainly helps, but without the acting, you got nothing. And the fact is, either you're born with the innate ability and you're born with the innate understanding of what that means, or you're not. If you are born with the innate understanding, then you can be trained. And that's how I approach teaching, is if there's people who are sort of inherently actors, then I can show them techniques and physical techniques to help them create their characters. But if they don't have it, they don't have it, and there's nothing I can do. And that's something I tell them right off the bat, first class.
And so
this is the way it is.
Like all teachers, you're just a catalyst to bring out...
That's exactly right.
Already.
That's exactly right. And that's all you can do, right? So that's the first thing, absolutely, is it's about the acting. And... the second thing is to try and always practice. Always, always, always. I mean, most of us are continuously talking in voices. I'm not doing it now because I'm really tired. But most of the time when you listen to a room full of voice actors, it sounds like a loony bin because, you know, everybody's always going off in different voices all the time. But there's a reason for that. We are continuously practicing and we're continuously trying to keep ourselves sharp.
So we creative juices.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if I'm watching TV and there's some commercial that comes on and someone has a really interesting voice, I'm immediately trying to replicate that voice because it's just neat to me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm always practicing, and I think that's a huge thing too. Is that if you want to work in the industry, you have to constantly be honing your skills. So those
are
the top two, I think.
Then one last quick view, mm-hmm. and then we'll wrap things up. Mm-hmm. But, you're a very busy man with lots of demands. You're a guest of honor, so you must be worshipped. And then when those 3 days are over, go back to work.
That's right.
But one quick question. On the shows that you've worked on, the American shows, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Like you said, they record you guys in the studio doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they record your faces so they can get down those
mm-hmm.
animations well. So have any of the shows that you've been in that they've done that, have you seen the characters take on some of your features?
Yeah, I did. That's happened a number of times. We did a series of movies called Bionicle, and I was in all 3 of those. And they had a camera in there. I think the Bionicle movies, actually, the camera was just for the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff. But I did a movie with James Woods called Arc, which I don't even think has been released yet, which is unfortunate. But I played the big bad guy on that show, which was really cool. And they did record us in the studio. And I saw sort of a first cut of Arc when we went back to do the pickups. And it wasn't finished by any stretch of the imagination, but there was enough there that you could see. And it was really neat because I could see, I remember when I saw this character, his name was Baramanda, you know, having these scenes and speaking, I was like me, except, you know, with long white hair and really good looking. Which, you know, for those of you who can't see me, that's not at all what I look like. But that was really cool to see that. And also I did this game called Sega Soccer Slam, and I played like...
Oh, I've been wanting to try that.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a 3-on-3, super fun, super fast-paced. I played like 15 characters in that show, and I did the motion capture as well for pretty much everybody. It was so much fun. And the thing is, when you play the game, and I can see me, I remember doing those moves, except now I'm like a 6'5" Russian guy, and then a little 4-foot Scottish guy, and, you know, so yeah, it's really cool when you see that.
you've probably got to get going.
Yes, yes, I probably should.
We appreciate you being on the show, and if you would, and we certainly would appreciate it, would you like to go and plug our show in one of your many character voices?
Certainly.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Alpha Q speaking! We are on ASO Radio, bringing the best in anime talk radio to you and all of your loved ones.
Well, once again, a big thanks to you, Mr. DeBell.
Thank you.
I apologize for saying your name wrong earlier.
That's all right.
And we appreciate you being on the
Thank
show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
And have a great time here at NDK 2000.
I shall indeed.
Oh, yeah, babe, I'll totally take you. Oh, man, I love Sock Hops, you know. We'll get us an egg drink and get a grape, you know. I mean, I could be a good egg soda. Oh, crap, we're back on. Okay, hi, everybody. No, I wasn't talking dirty with the girl pretending to be from the 1950s. That would be perverse. Okay, so, thank you, Mr. Duvall, for providing that time for our interview. And next week, we are going to feature the first part of our review with Miss Monica Royal. For now, however, we have a set of funnies for you, if you will, our humorous faux commercials, faux meaning fake, and here's a set of three plus one, as I like to say, of our little ditties.
Hey, boys and girls, this is the greatest thing to hit your living room. This year, from the Anime Fantastic Club, we have the new trading card game, limited to only 500,000 first issues, so get yours while they're still new. And for a special treat, 1 out of every 10 has a brand new gold-plated Dory Decimon card.
Wow, this game's so great. I think all other trading collectible card games suck, but now...
So, you better head to your nearest toy store and ask for the trading card game.
From Anime Fanatics.
Gentlemen, I welcome you from the future. I am the official spokesman for Spylor. Yes, Spylor. The toy company you haven't heard of because it doesn't exist yet. We have come from the past... Well, okay, maybe I should just start over. We've come from the future to the past, because in the future we are but a small toy company. But with our advanced technology, we will go and decimate all the other video game makers. With our new Spylor Game Station 64,000. This new game system is so advanced that it will make your eyeballs bleed from overexposure. Our system includes 64,000 bits of processing information in every bus channel. And this, my friends, means that you will get realistic experiences so in-depth, so exciting, so beyond today's technology that in the future, Spylor will be the only company that exists because we will have decimated everybody else with our advanced games, including Spyro the Dragon 87 and Final Fantasy XXX, exclusively only the Spylor system, because modern-day computers would take 18 weeks just to boot up the game. So be sure to visit us today at www.spylor.future.
Would you like to go and advertise on ASO Radio? It's really easy. All you have to do is give us money, and we'll put your message on the air. Is it really that simple? Yes, it is. But in case you want to go and get more details on how we'll take your hard-earned bucks so that you can get the buying power of our audience at your disposal, just go and visit us. And if you're the audience, I didn't just say that, at www.nz17.com/ASO/advert. And you'll find all the gory details on how your company can maximize your profits by fully virtualizing your targeted audience.
At the Goddess Helpline, we believe that everybody on Earth could use a little bit of help. A little bit of help from a goddess. At the Goddess Helpline, we can help you out if you have any wish in your heart that is pure. If you want to go and destroy the world, we can do that. But we don't like dealing with that sort of customer. If you want to order Top Ramen, that can be done. A billionaire? No problem. If you want to win the Indianapolis 500, we can manage that too. Anything's possible with the Goddess Helpline. Remember, our number is 1-800-555-GODDESS. That's 1-800-555-GODDESS. And we'll be right over for an immediate consultation.
Well, that does it for this week of ASO Radio. Thank you for joining us for episode 88. And of course, I know some of you out there might be expecting it, and I am one to go and indulge in your desires from time to time. So, being episode 88, you know I couldn't stay away from saying this for too long. So, for all the old school homies out there who was digging the movies in the 80s, 88 miles per hour, 88 miles per hour! That's the only way we can go back to the future! Maybe there's plutonium on every corner market in 1985, but in 1955 you just can't come across it like that. Alright, well, I think that's enough of that. Back to the Future reference, always welcome. Alright, so we've come to the end of episode 88. We will have some nice new reviews for you next time, some hopefully solid anime news, and of course, our review, that's R-E-V-U-E, with Monica Rial. Yes, that's right, the interview with such a lovely lady. Alright, well, enough of this. Let's go ahead and say sayonara for episode 88 of ASO Radio. Sayonara! ASO Radio is copyright of NC17 Productions. ASO Radio is licensed to the general public under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Additional licenses available. For more information, visit us online at www.nz17.com.